Good morning. It is now 9:02 a.m. We are here today, Wednesday, September 25th, 2013, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatna, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPA PA 13-010, JMI Edison versus the Guam Department of Education. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Peter Perez and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Rodlyn Marquez. Will appellant JMI Edison please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Madam Public Auditor and Mr. Hearing Officer. My name is Joshua Walsh, and I, along with my co-counsel Joe Rosano from the Law Office of Seville and Tang, and we represent the appellants in this matter, JMI Edison. JMI Edison is represented today by Mr. Eddie Lau, Mr. Johnny Lau, who are present.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GDOE please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. My name is Andrew Perez. I'm attorney for GDOE. And with me is Marcus Pito, the supply management administrator.
Thank you. Will interested third party JMB Modern Tech please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Wait, excuse me. Did you identify the other two in the back?
Oh, they're on our witness or
witness list.
Do we want to?
Right, we'll want to sequester them.
Okay. All right, so with me is also Carmen Titano, a buyer, one or two, with the GDOE, and Billy Cruz, who is the facilities manager at GDOE.
Thank
right,
you.
So will all witnesses please excuse themselves until called?
You may go down to the fourth floor of our office, and there's a conference room, there's only one person there, though, so you'll have to ring the bell, and
right.
Then they'll come to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just for clarity, the institutional representatives remain
right.
Present.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Foreman.
Good morning. I'm Seth Foreman from Dillon Roberts and Fowler, counsel for interested third party JMD Modern Tech. This is Mr. Gene Bunyan, president of JMD.
Can counsel for the parties just please ensure that none of their witnesses are in the room?
Yeah. The public is invited, but witnesses cannot be here. So, all right. Are you observers? Okay, no problem.
Thank you. We may proceed.
Okay. Before we proceed with the hearing, Mr. Paris, I was sort of dismayed when I read today's paper. DOE could lose $7.5 million. What is the nature of this funding?
It's the Adequate Education Trust. It used to be our funds, but was reverted under Guam law. The legislature reverted into a local trust. And the latest public law required that money be encumbered by September 30th of 2013.
But that still has the shade of ERA-related funding, does it not?
We treat it as local funding now because the legislature has control over it.
And when is the deadline for this?
September 30th, 2013.
At no point in your briefs did you ever indicate it that there was a possibility of loss.
I put it in my hearing brief, Your Honor.
I think all you indicated was that in the best interest of the territory.
Correct.
Okay. You did not indicate a deadline of using funds, that funds may expire. Did you? Did you ever use those words, that funds may expire?
In the best interest, I
You used the word in the best interest of the territory. Correct?
But I did advise that it would expire if it wasn't encumbered by September 30th, 2013.
We don't recall that, and you did not even ask for an expedited hearing,
well,
to my recollection, did you?
No, we didn't, because we were under it was our position that we encumbered those funds with the signing of the contract.
Because in any event, we have treated ERA differently. Had we known of this expiration, this could have been treated. OPA does its best, this administrative hearing does its best to resolve appeals within 90 to 120 days. This appeal was filed August 2nd. We're now having the hearing on this. Had you made known this situation, we could have done more than expedited it, but you did not in any way, shape, or form indicate that you wanted an expedited hearing.
Well, we were under the of the position that we encumbered those funds, and it was a post-war, but obviously your order says otherwise.
But still, even though there was the encumbrance, what I'm trying to say here is this could have been treated very differently, Mr. Paris, had you made this body be known that there could be this possibility. Now, why is the, once they've been encumbered now, why are you saying that there could still be a loss?
Well, as a result of your the OPA's order.
You're referring to the stay?
Correct.
Right. Well, the stay operates by operation of law, and there are procedures that GDOE can employ to...
And we are exploring those options right now.
Right.
We are.
But again, I mean, had GDOE made us aware that there was this looming loss of funds at issue, we would have expedited the proceedings. And the issue of the stay is separate and apart from GDOE, you know, expressing to this body that that danger was there. We would have expedited the proceedings had we been made aware of that. And your hearing brief filed on September 18th alludes to it, but that's the first indication that we have that we're dealing with this possible loss of funds. And that's the concern.
It's incumbent upon DOE to let the bodies know, and I'm disappointed that DOE was not more forthright in letting this body know.
Madam Public Auditor, if I may, just briefly on one matter related to this expedited proceeding. I just want to be clear. While I understand that the word error was used today, error related, our position is that these are not error funds. These are local funds.
Sure.
Of course, that makes a distinction needs to be made because of the nature of this money. And just to put it on the record, at Bait Stamps 87, this is... the notification of procurement over $500,000, Guam Department of Education clearly calls this a local procurement using local funds.
Correct.
So while we agree wholeheartedly about the need for an expedited process would have been useful here and probably would have helped avoid some of the concern that's going over this looming September 30th date that the GDOE is describing, and we just want to be clear that our position is this is local funding, this is a local procurement. So while there is this ERA issue out there, this process should move through the local procurement rules and the statutes that govern local procurement with local funds. That's all I wanted to add about that. Thank you.
Was that a local law?
Yes. I think it's public law 31234, I believe.
But again, to repeat, and you are correct because it did transform itself. The money was initially ERA funds. It did transform itself into local funds. But the whole essence of the initial source was that the money was to be spent quite as reasonably as possible. And the fact that even from a local deadline, that there was this local deadline, that was not made known to this body. And it was incumbent upon DOE to let all parties know of that particular looming deadline. Now we will proceed.
Does appellant wish to make an opening statement?
Sorry. Just preliminarily, has the OPA received our motion for reconsideration? That was filed yesterday.
Yes, sir.
I did.
Tab 30.
Yes, it's been received.
For all the parties, that is our intent to finish this hearing today.
Do the parties have any doubt that is not possible?
I believe it's possible.
Yeah.
Is the OPA going to address the motion at this time?
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll go forward on the hearing, and that issue will be merged with the hearing. So if the appellant has an opening statement.
Yes, Mr. Hearing Officer, Madam Public Auditor, briefly, and again, my name is Joshua Walsh, and I'm here at the council table with Joseph Rosano. We are here today because of a failure in the procurement process. JMI's, and I'm showing on the screen here what is GDOE base plan 1248 and 1249, document on the next. And this is the bid status and intent to award from June 22nd, 2013. And the failure of this procurement comes from one limited and discrete issue, and that is the discarding of JMI's bid because DOE, the contracting agency, determined that JMI had submitted a bid that was in violation of a clarification that said don't provide more than one price per item. That's don't provide alternate bids. And that's from the IFB, and we're looking now at date stamp 0019, section 2, purpose, saying don't submit alternate bids. That's the issue, that's the question, that's what was presented. Now, GDOE's bid protest decision held to that singular issue, saying that JMI submitted an alternate bid. What we are going to do today is we are going to present evidence, present documents, make argument to this tribunal that there was no alternate bid. There was no violation. JMI's bid protest shouldn't have been discarded as it was. Its bid submission should not have been discarded. Mr. Elow from JMI is going to explain how he put his bid together, why he put his bid together the way he did, how putting that bid together was mandated by the edicts of the contracting agency and calling for a mandatory site visit and sending out various clarifications, how he provided clarity to the contracting agency. But the contracting agency took that clarity and called it an ultimate bid when there was no ultimate bid. And what did that cost the territory? That has cost the territory an award to a contractor who is $2 million more expensive, potentially $10 million more expensive over the course of this procurement over 5 years, and has caused this consternation about these funds being lapsed at the end of the month. That is what this failing has caused. What we are hoping happens today is that this office corrects that error, and more than that, restores some faith to the procurement process here, and will tell an agency that the agency cannot wait until the end of its time frame to use funds, rush through a procurement, discard the lowest responsive bidder under some misguided understanding that they submitted an alternate bid, seek to excuse that behavior by ignoring the statutory stay that was in place, and then seek to have this body rush through some sort of confirmation of their award simply because there is this looming time frame. That cannot happen. And that's why we're here today, to show you there was no alternate bid. JMI Edison submitted the lowest responsive bid, and they should be made the awardee of this contract. So unless there's any direct questions for me at this time, I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you. DOE.
I agree with opposing counsel that this is a singular issue. And the issue is whether or not JMI followed the directions of the IFB. And we put forth that the evidence shows otherwise. They did not follow GDOE's IFB instructions. The instructions of the IFB, together with the amendments, together with the clarifications, will show that one price per item was asked for. There was no room for any distinguishing of items, whether they were new or replacement installations. There was no instruction to distinguish whether an item was a certain voltage opposed to another voltage. We put forth that in placing two bids in the bid form per item was in direct contravent of the IFB's instructions. And that is why the evidence will show that GDOE deemed JMI non-responsive in submitting their bid in IFB 008-2013.
Let me ask, if JMI's bid was considered responsive by GDOE, would they have been the lowest bidder?
Yes.
For both the 1-year calculation and the 5-year calculation?
The only I guess the evaluation bid was only for the first year PM and installation cost.
And is that how GDOE was calculating the lowest
Correct.
Responsive bidder?
Correct.
Andy?
To ask that question again.
Okay, so if you had accepted their bid, would they have been awarded the
Correct.
The contract?
They were the lowest bidder. If we did, if they were accepted as a responsive bidder.
Okay, and the other issue is what I'm having trouble understanding from the party's briefs is didn't JMI just submit a lump sum figure?
Did it.
In its bid? So how is that an alternate bid? I mean, wouldn't an alternate bid be it's $9,055,000 if it's this and it's going
I think,
to be
I think
million.
The distinguishing factor in this case is that JMI, in their bid form, submitted two bids, and that was non-responsive because they did not follow the directions of the IFP completely.
DOE's position that by specifying replacement cost versus new installation cost,
Correct.
That those are alternate bids?
They're, no, that they did follow the directions of the IFP.
But for that reason?
You're correct.
But if
Because
they,
it was contained in, as an instruction in the clarification.
So how does a bidder address in their price, and how does GDOE know whether they're getting new units or replacement units?
That information, I believe, was given pre-bid conferences, and I think that information was given to the bidders, and this is, you know, that would be come out in evidence, but to calculate their bid, not to allow them to distinguish what between items.
But doesn't that enable GDOE to determine the best value for what they're going to get under the contract by seeing they're going to get 349 new units or replacement units as opposed to, you know, one or two new units?
It does, but we didn't ask for that. I mean, to be fair, like all the other bidders put one price per item. And it would be unfair to them if we were to consider this JMI's bid without giving them the opportunity to change their bid also.
But I mean, it all comes down to one price, doesn't it? I mean, each bidder submitted one lump sum price.
Correct.
It's just in JMI's case, what they did was they just told you how they arrived at how they're calculating that price. And I don't see how that's an alternative bid because they're not saying it's going to be anything different than what they proposed.
Well, what we determined, or the department has determined, was that in the evaluation factors, the responsiveness and whether or not they complied with the IFB would be used to determine responsiveness. And because they failed to place one price per item, they failed to be responsive.
So GDOE stipulates that if JMI's bid were considered as responsive, that JMI would be the lowest responsive bidder on this.
Because we can't consider them responsive.
Now, if we find that they were responsive, you would find that they're the lowest bidder.
They would be the lowest bidder.
Okay, because we're dealing with expedited time frames, so we need to.
Okay.
Okay. And as Does JMB have an opening statement?
Wait, if I could just follow on that line of questioning. Your bid has 19 different items.
Correct.
And looking at JMI's bid, there was only a breakout in five of those 19
Correct.
Items.
Okay.
Correct. And then five of those 19, like item number five, I apologize for getting into the arguments
yeah.
now, but item number five, bait stamp 65. You asked for 349 units.
Correct.
And they gave you the price for 349 units. They could have, they were more, pardon the expression, expansionary, but they gave you the price for 349 units. You could have just added the grand total, and that would have been the price. They didn't give you 340.
But they didn't add the grand total.
Okay.
What they did was they...
They added it all up into one lump sum.
Correct.
Yeah. Unlike J&B, J&B didn't even add it up to give you a lump sum. You had to add it up. Okay. So there is a distinction between J&B's bid. J&B didn't even have a lump sum price. They only had a lump sum price by the number of units, not by the entire, by the total amount. And then item number five, item number six, item number seven, item number eight, and item number 10 were the only items that were, the bid was, quote, expansionary.
Correct.
Everything else was the same.
Correct.
It gave you a little bit more information. It's telling you, well, we think you're only going to need 340, and regardless, this is our price. If you, hey, if it's a lump sum price, and if you needed 20 new installation, and let's say 329 replacement, they eat the cost.
They do, but that would affect the lump sum price in the end, and that would put.
But what difference does it make? What difference does it make? They've just given you more information. They didn't give you a second price, an alternate price. Did they? Where is the alternate price?
It's GDOE's position. We wanted one price per
And you
item.
Got one price.
Well, it was distinguished on their part.
So what?
Well, we just didn't agree that that was allowable under the IFB.
You don't want a new price on a replacement for a replacement unit, do you?
No, but what we did was we didn't, this is an indefinite quantity bid, so we don't know how many
sure.
new, how
and
many
the,
old.
And the vendors run the risk that they might have to, you might need more new insulation than replacements. So the vendors run the risk. If everything was replacement, could have been a much lower price. Like, I would assume, for example, in item number one, where it's 144 multi-split units, that, I think those are all new. In certain areas, some are new, some are, it's hard to say, but by the time things roll around, you could conceivably have more new as opposed to replacements.
Right. I mean, JMI would be stuck with a low price and have to perform more than they expect.
Based on their own analysis. But they gave you a lump sum bid. All they've done was expanded their bid. I'm sure J&B had to do exactly the same thing. And all the other bidders had to do. The only difference is JMI.
The only difference is they followed the instruction. That's what our position is, that they followed the instruction.
Okay, that's your position.
Yeah.
Do you have an opening statement?
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. we're here largely today to say me too, Dr. DOE, somewhat different role than the last time we were in the
room. Closer to you, Mr.
I'm sorry?
Closer to you.
Okay, yes. We're here today mostly to agree with DOE, unlike the last time we were here in the same room. In terms of adding anything, we've noted in our briefing, both in response to the emergency motion for a stay in the hearing brief, that we believe there are other grounds for finding JMI non-responsive, such as failure to break down the one-year maintenance amount in bid sheets, provide details on the specifications on the 170-ton unit, possible questions about the warranty. These were not raised by DOE, which I guess once they found one ground for disqualification, didn't go further. We believe that
this, the Office of Public Accountability has discretion to look at these issues, otherwise they may still come up later. And we do have some other arguments in connection with the motion to lift stay. I don't know if you prefer we save that and join in with DOE and add our two cents once we reach the closing argument stage today.
You know, on the other issues regarding non-responsiveness, I know we have de novo review, but is it appropriate to deal with those issues when they weren't the basis of the protest and the protest decision? Is it proper for us to deal with an issue? Is it even right?
We would say yes, because there was adequate notice given. They were all mentioned in our brief back in August in response to the emergency motion to lift stay. If you feel otherwise, we would reserve those issues in case you rule in favor of JMI today. And then it was kind of, as the winning bidder back in July, we couldn't protest the JMI bid. But if the roles were reversed, then we would reserve those, and along with any other issues we might have.
I have concerns about dealing with those other issues in today's proceeding, because they're not part of the protest or the protest decision. And I think when we do the de novo review, we're reviewing those. Although we've got broad review, it's as to the issues raised. And while you've briefed it, it wasn't part of the protest and the protest decision. So that's my apprehension about those other issues that you refer to. The other thing is, because we've got this looming deadline, and the parties other than J&B seem to agree that it is a singular limited issue, and GDOE agrees that if we find JMI's bid was responsive, that JMI would have been the lowest responsive bidder. And I'm not saying we're ruling that way. Would the parties be willing to submit on the record and give us an opportunity to try to issue a decision today?
Before weighing in on that, may I just weigh in briefly on Mr. Foreman's comments about the other issues, just so we can keep that clarity in the record? I understand that that J&B raised it, they say, in the opposition to the motion for expedited brief on the stay issue. We explicitly asked not to have a reply because that was just on the stay issue. So these issues were not part of the agency's decision. And actually, these issues were not raised by the interested party on comments to the agency report as the procurement law requires. Right? The procurement law says if you're going to make comments on the agency report as an interested party, submit them within the 10-day time frame. We made comments on the agency report. J&B did not. JMB's issues, these other issues that they're talking about, were raised in the hearing brief from last week and were raised in, I don't remember them being raised, but I trust everything Mr. Foreman says. They were raised, according to Mr. Foreman, in their opposition, which we didn't reply to because we were seeking expedited. We waived that reply. We just said we wanted to deal with the state issue. So just on those extraneous issues, I just wanted to add that. In terms of submitting on the record based on this limited issue, can I just a moment talk with my client?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's water for any of the parties if they care to partake. Oh, thank you. Please help yourself.